You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
10, 9, 8, 7, ignition sequence started. All engines are started. We have ignition, 2, 1, 0, we have a liftoff. We have a liftoff and it's lighting up the area. It's just like daylight here at Kennedy Space Center. The Saturn V is moving off the pad. It is now clear of the tower.
White Rocket Books presents an audiobook special, Lucian, Dark God's Homecoming, by Van Allen Plexico, read by the author. 1. Down rained the night, cloaked all in fire and brimstone. Surely the dark forces of hell were conspiring to bring me down. Me, doubtlessly the darkest of them all. A faceless figure in black pursuing me, I raced through twisted vistas and realms shot from strange demented nightmares. Please do not think less of me for fleeing. Were I a warrior god, I would have squared off against this creature and battled into the bloody end. Being something else entirely, I did the only thing I could. I fled, and the dark man pursued, relentlessly, tirelessly. He pursued. Lungs burning and legs aching, I sprinted the final miles toward the gates of the Golden City. My adversary struck at me with gouts of flame and fingers of lightning, searing my flesh and dazzling my eyes. I retaliated as best I could, sometimes opening pits of molten lava in his path, other times raining down burning meteors upon his head. Our running battle must have razed portions of a dozen worlds and more, and still the pursuit went on. Not wishing to abandon all hope entirely, I gave it everything I had. But even the gods tire after a while. I was nearing my physical and metaphysical limits, and I knew it. And then I topped a rise and saw the city. My city, the Golden City. Its domes and spires sparkled in the sun of a perfect cloudless sky. Upon seeing it, my heart leapt, as it hadn't in all the 1,000 years of my exile. So close, almost home, but then pain. Ragged claws raked through my tattered cloak and across my back as I surged toward the gates. Dark energies besieged me every step of the way. My heart about to burst, I poured the last of my strength into this mad dash. Furious, my adversary lashed out at me with all of his might. Tendrils of fire ensnared me and surged over my chest and arms, then flowed toward my legs, seeking to bring me down. My sweat flowed in rivulets along my face and neck as I swept the flames aside and ran for the gates. Disoriented himself for a moment, the dark man fell a few steps behind me. I didn't bother to look back. I lunged for those cold gold surfaces and laid my hands and my fondest wishes upon them. The fire again swirled around me, singeing my hair, but I gritted my teeth and heaved against them with all my strength and all my force of will. The great gilded doors resisted, and I was not surprised. Many of the gods had wanted me gone from the city, and they had laid their own wishes in that regard upon the gates. An eternity that in reality could not have lasted more than 2 seconds passed. The gates felt the force of my personality, and they knew me and had no recourse but to yield. I slipped through the narrow opening, the dark man mere inches behind me now. His black robes flared around him as he lunged after me, talons slashing. I delivered the strongest punch I could muster to that featureless face, staggering him. As he stumbled back, I raised my stinging hand and made one last satisfying and defiant gesture. before shoving the gates closed and slumping against them, gasping. The gates would not know him. They would not open for him. I was safe. Safe in the heart of my true enemy's stronghold, I realized with a groan. One issue at a time, Lucian. Allowing myself a few breaths and some measure of self-congratulation for having gotten this far, I stood and gazed at the vista laid out before me. In its spectacle and its grandeur, it represented everything I had missed for the 1,000 years of my exile. No matter who controlled it at the moment, it was and always would be my city, the city of my dreams. My eyes drank in the glorious sights that never failed to stir me, no matter how cynical and jaded I grew. A city wrought all in gold and silver and jewels beyond counting. A realm that reflected in its appearance the esteem its inhabitants held for it. Know simply that the city is the center of the gods' existence and the focus of our heart's desires. At its center flows the fountain that pushes the not-quite-metaphorical current through the circuits of our bodies and our lives. Once it had been my home, it remained my dream and my utter ambition. I believed with complete conviction that, upon reclaiming it, I would not willingly surrender it again. That was when it hit me. No, not the massive golden armored fist. That came a few seconds later. What hit me first was the shocking realization that the inhabitants were nowhere to be seen. I was alone in the main thoroughfare of the city, alone in an immortal city usually teeming with gods and goddesses, their retainers and favorites, and a multitude of assorted other hangers-on. Amid that thought, not totally alone, as the voice that boomed and echoed throughout the city revealed, "What supreme arrogance!" Inside, I felt my stomach sink, along with my slender hopes of being warmly welcomed back into the fold. "You dare to come here to show your face at the sight of your unforgivable, unimaginable crimes?" "Surely it was not as bad as all that," I called back. "And don't you suppose I've more than served my time?" Golden lights flared about me then. I knew them all too well, collectively known as the hosts of Baranak. They were half-sentient, ephemeral servants and heralds of our own great god of battle. Ghost-like, they flitted about me, their sparkling majesty filling my vision momentarily. When they withdrew, I blinked and beheld a sight I'd hoped to avoid. The golden god himself, grand and awful and full of wrath, standing before me in all his polished glory and muscular power. Intense blue eyes glared at me from above a blunted nose and thick blonde beard. Golden armor covered him from neck to toe. A huge golden-hilted sword hung at his side, and I remembered that it was strong and swift and terrible. "Baranak," I said, brushing my long dark hair back out of my eyes and greeting him with the closest thing to a smile I could manage.
"Lucian,"
his voice was deep and rumbling, his face cold and expressionless. "I cannot imagine your plan or what you hope to gain by all of this, but you should have remained in hiding." His fists knotted. "For now you must be punished, and with the fountain flowing once more, you can be punished." This was surely the most I'd ever heard him utter at one time, and I frowned, trying to make sense of his words. "My plan? But the insurrection was so long ago."
"So many of us dead," he bellowed.
His fist swung out in a golden flash, sending me sprawling.
"So many!"
Ages had passed since I'd last met that fist, and I would have been quite pleased never to encounter its like again. As I pulled myself up, shaking my head to clear it, he advanced, his face still somewhat calm, but his eyes burning brighter with controlled fury. The massive fists lashed out again. "Dead?" I tried to ask him just what the hell he was talking about, in between blows, but to no avail. The brutality of the beating I absorbed was matched only by its thoroughness. As we are unable to create portals within the confines of the city, I could not make my own exit and flee. There was absolutely nothing I could do but take the beating. What you have to understand is that Baranak is supposed to be able to kick my ass. That doesn't mean I won't do my best to resist. It simply means I will fail. I am not, after all, the god of battle. Unfortunately, he is. As oblivion descended, his words echoed through my mind once more. The other gods, dead? Was that what he had meant? How could that be? Any further consideration had to be deferred as I was busy lapsing into unconsciousness. In sleep's cold embrace I dreamed, and in dreams I saw again the events that had started me on my journey back to the city. On a day like so many before it, running back endlessly across the centuries, I awoke with the Mycentian dawn and climbed out of bed, gazing out of the broad palace windows overlooking my capital city, gingerly stretching my aged body, my withered muscles, my brittle bones. Instantly I sensed it. Something felt different that morning, both within my flesh and in the very air surrounding me. Before I could pause to consider it, though, the serving girls entered carrying trays of fruits and bread. The resounding crash of their trays hitting the marble floor caused me to look up in surprise, only to witness the girls fleeing my bedchamber, shouts of alarm on their lips. Startled, looking about for signs of intruders, I pulled my robe tighter about myself and rushed after them. Tyron, the captain of my guards, met me at the door. Having served me for many years, he had earned my implicit trust, and I waited for him to explain this strange turn of events. It was not to be. Gawking, eyes wide, he stumbled back a few steps, then called for his men. They rushed up behind him, resplendent in their white uniforms, weapons at the ready, even as I attempted to ask what was happening. "Who are you?" Tyron demanded. "Where is my Lord Marcos?" Frowning, utterly bewildered, I searched the faces of the guards, these men and women who had been in my employ for much of their lives. None of them exhibited the slightest signs of recognition. Shocked and rapidly growing fearful as well, I whirled about, casting my gaze across the furnishings of the room, seeking a mirror. I desired above all else at that moment to see what my guards were seeing. It was not to be, of course. I had banned all mirrors from my presence years earlier, when my aging had grown so pronounced that I could no longer bear to look upon myself. At last I brought my hands up to my face, and then I began to understand. My shock, profound after so many decades of helpless wasting away, must have been obvious. My skin felt smooth, my hair thick and strong. Looking at my hands, I saw they belonged to a young man, not the ancient figure I had become. Staggering back, I slipped and fell to the cold floor, and fears immediately rushed through me. Had I broken a bone? No, I had hardly felt the impact. I was whole again. I was young. Springing to my feet, I faced the guards and laughed maniacally, practically bouncing in the air. Confused, they hesitated in moving to apprehend what they surely took to be an intruder in the palace. One of them recognized something about my features then, minus the wrinkles and spots, and gasped in awe. Others quickly followed suit, and then the captain, Tyron, knelt on one knee, his mouth working soundlessly for a second. My Lord Marcos, he whispered finally, using the name I had adopted on this world. Awe filled his voice. How can this be? I could feel it then. In truth, I had felt it from the moment I had awakened, but its long absence had dulled my sensitivity to it. A low, soft buzzing, growing steadily stronger. Not a sound, a sensation, a feeling, as of a current long absent now flowing once more through the firmament, through the fabric of the universe itself. A sense of awesome, nearly limitless power once again at my disposal. The power! After long decades, it had returned. During the night, it had swept over me, carrying away the effects of age and restoring my appearance and condition to that of a man of 30. It had made me a god once more. Scarcely acknowledging my guards and the advisors who had rushed up as word of an intruder had spread through the palace, I turned the entirety of my attention instead to a goal I had believed forever denied me. What would become of Mycentia, this world upon which I had dwelt in exile for 10 centuries and over which I had reigned for much of that time? What of the war I had been fomenting subtly against the mighty Terran Alliance? To what fate was I abandoning the Mycentians and the other inhabitants of the outer worlds? At that moment, I did not know and scarcely cared at all. For me, a destiny far greater awaited. The golden city so long denied me beckoned. Thus did I take my leave of the mortal realm and set my foot upon the road once more, the road leading home. My faceless acquaintance with the excessively somber sartorial preferences had been lurking along the way. Who was he? No way to know, and he had not seemed the talkative sort. Had he been lying in wait for me? Someone in my line of work cannot afford to believe in coincidences. The dream images faded then, and I drifted in peaceful blackness for a time. It could not last, of course, though I clung to that great oblivion with all of my unconscious willpower for as long as I could. Some small part of me, you see, knew where I would find myself upon awakening, and wished to delay that bitter revelation for as long as possible. Soon enough, though, reality reasserted itself, and my worst fears were dreadfully, depressingly confirmed. I awoke to a cold floor beneath my prone body and a throbbing in my skull. My muscles ached, my spirits flagged, and depression overwhelmed me to the point that I scarcely felt any desire to move. Though there was scarcely a reason to do so, I opened my eyes and was greeted with the sights I had expected. Black marble tile beneath me stretched endlessly into darkness in every direction. Immense stone columns soared into nothingness above. No visible walls, no furnishings whatsoever, all just as I remembered it from my last stay here 1,000 years ago. Any remaining hopes I might have entertained evaporated. At that moment, the sound of hushed words from nearby reached my ears, and I became aware that I was not alone. My eyes, peering through the gloom, focused on 3 individuals who sat huddled against a nearby column. They were clad in what appeared to be military flight suits, dark blue with gold insignias. The look seemed somehow familiar to me. Alliance? That could scarcely be possible here. Yet, as their faces resolved to me, I knew they were no gods. Humans? Apparently, but here? How? "Told you already," one of them was saying. "There was no malfunction. All the systems showed green. It just powered down. I don't know what we could have done differently." The voice was male, high-pitched and filled with anxiety. "Everything checked out right up until the end." "If that's so," came a deeper, rougher voice, "then you must have screwed things up even worse than I thought."
"That's enough," a third voice stated firmly. "Whatever happened, we're here now, and our only priority is to get back home, and we will." This one was female, firm and confident, the leader.
"We don't even know where here is," the first voice complained.
"Then we have to find out." A pause, then the second rougher voice growled,
"Maybe our friend over there knows. Maybe we should try to wake him up again."
"Leave him alone," the woman said. "He looks to be in worse shape than we are." One of the figures was staring at me.
"No, I think he's already awake." It was the first guy, the nervous one.
I sighed softly, wanting to roll over and go back to sleep, but some small degree of curiosity about these people, I had to admit, tugged at my mind. Reluctantly, and with some effort, I pulled myself up to a seated position and faced the others waiting. They all stood then and made their way over to stand in front of me in a semicircle.
"Hello," the woman said. "Can you understand me?"
Their uniforms were definitely Terran Alliance issue, I could see now. Could they actually be Alliance officers, or was this some joke of Baranax? Not meeting their eyes, I nodded once.
"Good," she said. "Are you all right?"
A pause, then, Can you tell us where we are? This woman surprised me. Her voice was strong and even, lacking the fear and desperation I would have expected from any mortal confined in this place, the fear already detectable in at least one of the others. Perhaps she simply knew too little to fully appreciate her plight, I thought to myself. Drowning in self-pity and horrified at the thought of revealing that fact to mere humans, I resolved to ignore them. "Can you tell us where we are?" she said again. "Can you help us?" I emitted one sharp laugh before rolling onto my side, my back to them. "Hey," shouted the rougher voice, "what's that all about? You can understand us. Why don't you answer the captain's questions?" Seconds ticked by. I was in no hurry. Where else would any of us go? But they were all standing there, waiting, hoping I could tell them something that would explain their bizarre predicament. At last, I turned back to them. "Who," I asked, "are you?" They all seemed shocked that I had actually spoken. Regaining her composure quickly, the woman said, "I'm Captain Evelyn Kolikos, Terran Alliance Navy." The Terran Alliance, so it was true. Only a day earlier, still powerless and trapped in exile, I had believed the Alliance represented my mortal enemy, mortal in every sense of the word. Now, a god again, and removed entirely from that existence, I cared nothing for that government or its people, save a lingering sense of resentment and animosity. The woman gestured at the two men, gruff one first. "Lieutenants Frank Cassidy and Tony Kim. And we," her voice lowered and she all but whispered, "we would appreciate your help." I took a deep breath, pursed my lips, and looked them over carefully, taking the opportunity to appraise them. All three were what one would expect of naval officers. They were fit to the point of being athletic. The captain had short but full blonde hair and piercing blue eyes so vivid they struck me as belonging more on one of my kind than hers. Behind her, the rough-sounding guy, Cassidy, was tall, though not so much as me, and an imposing specimen, blunt of nose and ruddy of cheeks. He kept his head shaved and his muscles filled out his flight suit. The other man, Kim, possessed hair even darker than mine, worn in a crew cut, and was the shortest of the three, though wiry. Perhaps realizing after a few moments that I was in no hurry to speak, the captain addressed me again. "We," she hesitated, frowning then, "I'm sorry if this doesn't make sense to you, but it doesn't to me either. We were aboard a long-range spacecraft, and something happened." "The Copernicus," I said. I remembered hearing about its disappearance on the news days ago, just before I'd taken my leave of Mycentia and started for home. "Yes, yes, that's right." Emboldened, perhaps, that she'd gotten a word or two out of me, she pressed on. "We had just jumped, and something must have gone wrong. When we emerged into what should have been subspace, the engine shut down." "Yours was an experimental ship," I said. "How did you know that?" the smaller man Kim demanded. It seemed to me he hovered perpetually on the verge of hysteria. "I think I know," Cassidy said. "I think he's from the Outer Worlds." "A spy, maybe?" Kim asked, looking from Cassidy back to me. "He does look familiar, now that I think about it." The captain silenced them both with a look, then turned back to me, her brow furrowed. "What else do you know about our situation?" "You sought to improve jump technology. You jumped farther than you know," I grinned. "Much farther." "The stars disappeared," Kim said quietly, his voice shaking. Ignoring him, the captain continued. "The next thing we knew, we were attacked by these bright lights." "The hosts of Baranak." All right, sure. "And they nearly tore our ship apart before bringing us here. Wherever here is. And a man. A huge man in gold armor threw us into this..." She looked around at the infinite seeming depths of blackness around us. "This place, wherever it is."
"We didn't do anything to him," Cassidy interjected angrily.
"You scarcely could have," I replied, a slight smile playing about the corner of my mouth. "And he was no man." The captain looked back at the others. Each of them shared a confused expression, shaking her head as if to clear it, as if this could all make sense to her somehow if she could just sort out the pieces. She turned back to me. "We're lost. We're out of our depths. Anything you could tell us would be welcome. I met her eyes. Are you sure of that? She shrugged. When she spoke again, her voice was softer. At least tell us something. I considered her request for a long moment. My advice to you, abandon all hope, I said, and turn my back once more. Silence for perhaps 2 seconds, and then, son of a, who do you think you are? Cassidy grabbed my shoulder roughly. You'll answer our questions, or... His voice trailed off as my dark eyes met his. He felt something of the power then, and faltered, staggering back a step. My wrath aroused at last, I made as if to rise, but stopped myself as the woman interposed herself between us. Frank, that isn't helping, the woman said. Step back. Somewhat reluctantly, Cassidy moved away, smoothing out his flight suit as he went, his face still revealing his anger. We don't even know this person. Maybe we should start over. She bent down over me, extending a hand. My name is Evelyn. What's yours? She startled me with her composure, and though my anger dissipated almost instantly, I determined to shake her up. Considering the truth I was about to reveal, I couldn't help but laugh. I took her hand and shook it. Pleased to meet you. I am Lucian, considered in these parts to be the devil himself. And as to where we are, I gestured broadly with both hands. Welcome to the dungeons of heaven. Their faces registered no expression. Unfortunate, I had hoped at least for shock or fear or something to indicate they appreciated the seriousness of their situation, but they truly had no clue. Now, if you will excuse me, I said in as friendly a manner as I could muster, I have to be thinking of a way out of this most inescapable of prisons before Baranak surely returns to execute us all. I turned away, and this time they respected my wishes. Perhaps during my time among their kind, I would have been more patient with them, more willing to help. But those days were now over, and thus I found I had little interest in their plight. And I had not, I reminded myself, not precisely been among their kind, the Alliance, but among their enemies, the Outer Worlds. I had fought their kind for centuries. Help them now? Hardly, I thought. Let them rot. This has been an excerpt from Lucian, Dark God's Homecoming, the first novel in The Above Saga by Van Allen Plexico, read by the author. You can find the book in paperback from White Rocket Books on Amazon.com or any bookstore, or you can download it for your Kindle. Thanks for listening, and we will see you down the road.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.